This is Jim Inkster. Coming today, we'll wrap up 2012 with a show about all the goings-on for this year. And as we approach midnight, there is the fiscal cliff looming. We'll talk about what happened in politics in this year with President Obama winning re-election by almost 5 million votes. With Gus Weil, a man who knows his way around the block when it comes to political campaigns. He started in 1958, and two years later, he was helping John Kennedy win the presidency. Gus Weil with us to talk about some of the people we lost in the past year as well. All this today, but first the news on 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge, our final show for 2012. And if you would like to join the conversation, 297-5633 is your number outside the area. It is 877-217-5757. You may reach us online, jim at wrkf.org, and a better one is inkstershow at wrkf.org. Our guest is Gus Weil, the sage of political consultants in Louisiana and elsewhere, a man who was on the ground floor of his business, which is now part of the American fabric. When it comes to campaigns in America, everyone starts with a political consultant, and this year was a year of politics, and we'll start with that. Gus Weil predicted that President Obama would win re-election, and he not only won re-election, but he won by almost 5 million votes. Gus Weil, are you crowing about your correct prediction?
Well, no, I'm quiet because I've been wrong so many times, you know.
Well, what about the fiscal cliff as we approach midnight of 2012, the final day of the year? There is concern that we could be going off this fiscal cliff. What will happen if we do?
Jim, it'll be catastrophic for us. I think that we'll go off the cliff in the main, but I think some little emergency legislation will be passed to try and soften some of it. In other words, I don't think we'll go screaming off the cliff, but yelping would be a better word, I think. But I don't think that the Republicans and the Democrats are going to get together. I'm afraid that what has happened is the Republican Party has been divided, and this Tea Party people, who've been beaten constantly, still maintain a psychological hold on the Republican Party, and I don't think they're compromised on anything.
So you blame the GOP for this?
I don't blame the regular Republican Party, the GOP. I blame the far right wing of the Republican Party, which I think we can now properly term the Tea Party.
Well, we just had an election, and the president, as stated, won by a fairly handsome margin. Democrats, even though they did not regain control of the U.S. House, more people voted for Democrats than Republicans in House races in this country by about 1%. And Democrats control the United States Senate, gain seats in both the Senate and the House. It would seem that the electoral happenings of November might be an influence on people like Mitch McConnell and John Boehner, but they're holding their ground, Gus.
Yes, they're holding their ground because this new Congress is going to elect new officers, particularly in the House, and I think a man like Boehner is afraid he'd lose that incredible position to some new Speaker of the House. So I don't think he's going to buck them. I think we live in a time in which there is an almost total lack of what John F. Kennedy called profiles and courage. I think now we live in a time, if you were trying to sum it up in a literary way, you would call it profile and fear, because I think so many politicians... I noticed something interesting, and this is going to come as a shock to many of your listeners, though I know you'll be aware of it. Do you know the Congress, with all its disarray, has just passed a 5% pay raise for themselves?
They do that every year.
Well, they do it particularly this year because it's lame ducks can vote for it and not be penalized because they're leaving the Congress. So this is the year to do it, and they got a 5% raise, even as we begin talking about cutting back on Social Security and Medicare, which is almost inconceivable to a senior citizen. And I'm not talking about wealthy people. I'm talking about the average senior citizen. Social Security is the difference in life and death. Welfare is a difference in life and death. If you get hit by a bill from a hospital, I'll give you an example. I went to a hospital, and I had what's called a trigger finger. That is, one of my fingers had frozen up. It lay flat against my palm. So I went to the hospital. I'm not going to name which hospital. And a doctor saw me in the emergency room, and he gave me a shot in the palm of my hand for this trigger finger. Well, I got a bill for $500. Now, for an old person on a fixed income, $500 is kind of a matter of life and death, but there it was. So I'm just saying that I would tell people who are at the lower end of the economic spectrum, beware, because your very life is in danger. And I'm not an alarmist. And I want to tell you, I don't know what the solution is. The only thing I can think of is that, I dare not mention this word, but there's some kind of quiet revolution in this country where we throw all the rascals out and start over.
297-5633 if you'd like to join the conversation as we close out 2012 with a live show with my first mentor, Gus Weil, on the last day of this year. And next year will be a big year for Gus as he turns 80 years old. That can't be, Gus Weil.
And feel it. I hear about people talking about the wonderful things about old age, but I want to tell you, they hide from me.
Yeah.
I'm unable to discover them. First of all, when you're old, and I think 80 qualifies me, mm-hmm. when you're old, you have a lot of wisdom. My goodness. But nobody wants it.
Yeah.
You're behind the times. You has been. And perhaps that's properly so, because I think that each generation has to get out of the way so that the next generation can come forward and do its thing. Maybe that's a good thing.
Well, one
thing, I know when I was a young man, I felt that way.
One thing is certain. Gus Weil will never be a has-been. Before we go to the phone lines, you're talking about these people on Capitol Hill getting their pay raise. And these are the same folks who'll vote themselves a big raise, funded by the taxpayers of this great country, who rail against big government.
Yes.
And many of these people have never had jobs in the private sector. If they're really against big government, Gus.
Well, I want to tell you, the first person who comes to my mind is our governor, Governor Jindal, who I don't know, I don't think he's ever had a real job outside of government. In other words, I don't think he's ever had to bring a lunch pail and make up to the boss. I think he's been a job, had a job his whole life in the protected environment of kind of a civil service. Yet he would be among the biggest people vociferous against big government.
But has benefited from big government.
Oh, my goodness. But he's eaten at the trough of big government his entire life.
And so has Junior Senator David Bitter. So has Congressman Bill Cassidy, who has worked at a public hospital for most of his career.
And all those people rail against the wrongs that can accrue from big government. I don't know what we do, and I've studied it for about half a century. I don't know what we do without government. And if the word is big government, so be it.
Jeff on
I've
the rebound.
I've never felt like a captive. I've never felt that good morning. Somebody was telling me what to do.
Jeff, you're on the air with Gus.
Thank you very much. Gus, I just have a question for you. I know you've had a business, managed a business most of your life with your public relations business. Do you think you could sustain your business if most of the money that you spent was borrowed? And at what point do you think that, I mean, we have a problem with the government right now, but yes, we have big government and we have a lot of good things from government, but most of the money that we're spending right now in big government is being borrowed. When is that money going to get cut off? And what do we do to try to keep us from turning into a place like Greece, where we have people rioting in the streets because they're not getting their government check?
Well, I agree with you that government has perhaps grown too big and is making too many demands on the taxpayer. I go along with that. And I go along with that it's time that we call some kind of a halt to it. But I don't want it to be on old people or poor people or school teachers. For goodness sakes, I was talking to a teacher from LSU, and they told me that they got a phone call that they were fired because of cutbacks at LSU. I guess that solves something, but what we've done is we've taken apart the one probably bright light in Louisiana, that is the educational system, LSU primarily, and we're taking it apart. And we're making it possible for people to go to private schools. There's something wrong with public education. Yet public education produced our governor. And he's a bright man. He went to Baton Rouge High School. Wasn't anything wrong with that. But it's wrong now. What happened? When did everything go in the tank?
Jeff, any other thoughts from you?
I guess, you know, I guess I just don't know what the solution is. I mean, you're right. You know, we do have to have higher education. Franklin Foyle had proposed several times, and he's shot down every time, that we should revisit the Louisiana Constitution so that all of the hits don't take place on medical services and on higher education. We have so many dedicated funds in Louisiana that you can't, the legislature doesn't have any power to adjust anything. So, you know, that's been a solution that's been proposed. Why wouldn't we look at that?
Yeah, I don't know if we wouldn't be better off without a small handful of experts solving those things, because when the legislature meets, normally it's a nightmare what comes out of it. Just a nightmare.
297-5633 if you'd like to visit with Gus Weil. But there was a time, Gus, when being a public servant was considered to be a noble calling, and working for the government. I think the people who work at the Capitol and work at universities, they're doing good work. Why is there this stigma that they're part of the 47% who are living off the benevolence of taxpayers?
Off the land, that's right. I think that what you have there is, I call them the Tea Party, but that philosophy that has developed over the years, that the evil one is big government, or government at all. I don't know what those people want. The alternative to government solving our problems would be a dictatorship. We don't want that, I don't think. And you're right, it wasn't always that way. When I was in the Louisiana state government as executive secretary to John McKiffin, I thought it was an honor. My salary as executive secretary was $14,000 a year. I would bet now, and I don't know this, that the executive secretary now serving, I bet he or she makes $100,000 a year.
Or more.
Or more. But as I say, I made $14,000.
297-5633, time for a break. We'll be back with Gus Weil. And if you'd like to join the conversation, 877-217-5757 works wherever you may be. Back after this 90-second timeout. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. Your number is 297-5633. or 877-217-5757. Gus Weil, the veteran, legendary political consultant, is with us. Mike on airline. Mike, good morning to you.
Good morning, Jim. As a personal revolution, as Gus was saying, we might need a revolution. My personal revolution is I'm no longer voting for any incumbent. No longer voting for any incumbent. We need new ideas, new personnel, a new direction. And if the incumbency is not wanting to be able to provide it, then they don't get my vote. Thank you.
All right, Mike. We've heard this anti-incumbency fervor before, Gus. When will it ever take hold?
Well, I'll tell you, one of the things that went a long way towards fixing that was term limits. When term limits first came out, I was against it because I said, well, we can't lose the people who have experience. But now I think probably two terms is enough for anybody. And the infusion of fresh ideas, fresh energy, is one of the answers, I think.
297-5633 for Gus Weil, who is opining about matters of importance in this world of ours from 2012. And perhaps the biggest story of the year occurred a few weeks ago in Newtown, Connecticut. What's your reading on the aftermath of the terrible shooting of 20 school children and six others at Newtown? What do you think, Gus?
Let's talk about Newtown. It happens just about once a year someplace. It's not always this severe. Sometimes it's just a handful of people or two firemen going out to answer callers. Happened a week ago in New York, and a sniper waiting in late for them. First of all, I am for the right to own weapons. It must be important because the Founding Fathers made it the very second amendment to the Constitution, the right to bear arms. So I am for that. A lot of my friends, I don't hunt, never. A lot of my friends hunt, and I like the gumbo that comes from it. But I want to tell you, I don't have a friend who needs an automatic rifle. I can't imagine what my friend would do with that. 100 clips or 50 clips in a rifle that you can fire off automatically, mechanically. Yet that weapon is all over the place. The genie is out the bottle. And we're having difficulty trying to put a stop to it. For example, I heard the current governor of Florida. Oh, and he felt terrible about what happened at Newtown. Oh, my goodness. He couldn't get over it. So sympathetic. But he never mentioned a word about those weapons. And when the moderator who was interviewing him tried to press him for an answer, he wouldn't even make a comment. And that's the governor of a sovereign state.
297-5633 is your number. Eric on Lee Drive. Eric, you're on the air with Gus Weil. Hi, Eric.
Hey, Gus. I do want to say this, though, when you refer to, you know, maybe Tea Partiers or conservative folks who for limited government, that's what we're not doing away with government. We're not for anarchy or dictatorship. We're just against the overreaching of government.
All right, you're fading a bit, Eric, but I think we got the gist of what you were saying. He says that true conservatives aren't against eliminating government, just like you're not against eliminating guns. They're against curtailing government. Is that a fair assessment of where we are right now?
No, I think that's a proper function of the citizenry to curtail. Well, for example, the American Revolution was based on the curtailing of a government. A national England's government to tax us. No, I'm for the people having a voice on things like that. But when we turn our government into our enemy, and everything that government aspires to or wants to do becomes a sin, something to watch out for and to put down, what we do is what we are about to do in the Congress of the United States. We paralyze government. And so many people need government. We can't do away with government, for goodness sakes. You would have anarchy of a... It would be unbelievable what would happen out there if there was no government.
Glenn in Prairieville. Glenn, you're on the air with Gus Weil.
Yes, I'd like to talk about a meme that seems to be out there that dedicated funds limit state government so greatly in their ability to do things. If you look at the dedications, most of them are for things like highways. I don't know that we want to spend a whole lot less on transportation. And then the minimum foundation for local education for elementary and high school. And most of the other dedications in the budget are relatively small and would hardly make a difference even if he totally eliminated them. So I'm not so sure that we will be finding very much in that pot of money.
All right. Well,
I think that he's right, but I think what people rail against, and properly so, is the terrible waste of government, the unbelievable waste of government. I hold in my hand a bottle of pills that I just got. Due to age, I need these pills. Well, the price on them is $35 for 30 pills. That's a lot of money. I guess these pills cost a penny a piece to manufacture. So I think what we are doing when we rail against government is we're trying to put some kind of a halter on it, something to pull back and say, wait a minute, that's enough. And I'm for that. I'm all for that. I'm not against that. And some government is crazy. But I'm not suspicious of everything government does. I don't think that everybody in government is a crook. I don't think our president is a communist. You've got that going on in our country.
297-5633, Charles in Jefferson Terrace. Good morning, Charles. You're on with Gus.
Yeah, so several comments. First of all, I think it's incredibly presumptuous for you to tell me what I need. I don't tell you that you don't need this program. You know, that's up to me. As to what I do with the firearms you described, I shoot targets. Like I told Mary Landrieu, I shot over 100,000 rounds, never hit anybody. So either I'm a poor shot or it's just fun to shoot targets. And, you know, the genie is out of the bag. Instead of the idea of, oh, my gosh, let's stop these. They're there. What are we going to do? And the other thing that's being missed here and not talked about is that the vast majority, particularly here in Baton Rouge, of crimes, of violence, and particularly guns, is black-on-black murders. And we don't talk about that very much.
Well, first of all, I'm sorry that your listener finds me presumptuous. And I certainly have no intentions of telling him how to run his life at any level. I'm just expressing the opinion of one old man. As far as black-on-black crime he mentioned, it is a terrible thing. And I don't know the solution, and neither does anybody else. We don't talk about it. Politicians want to get reelected. Of course they don't want to talk about it. But it is horrible. And I think to the respectable black citizen, and that's the majority, I think they're more upset than we are, but they dare not say anything about it.
Well, most people are law-abiding citizens and would not use these weapons for any purpose that would be wrong, but there are people who have intentions other than those expressed by Charles, and those are the people we are concerned about. How do we keep guns out of the hands of people who are up to no good, Gus?
I don't know. I know that we can keep it out of the hands of people who have come through the who have gone wrong with the system of law, or who have been on a mental institution. The gun checks that are made now in many states, when you buy a weapon, that prohibits a lot of them. But you take this boy who killed everybody and knew that he could kill. He didn't have to buy guns. His mama bought them for them. And yet she knew this was a very troubled boy because she instructed people, do not leave him alone. And she took him out of the school system. So she knew she was dealing with a troubled man, but she had a rather good collection of murderous weapons. And the first time he had a shot at him, he took him and wrecked the most terrible havoc in many years in America. Little, tiny, innocent children.
David in Hammond. David, good morning. You're on the air with Gus Weil. Hi, David.
Good morning, Gus.
Yes, David.
Hello?
Yes, you're on the air.
Yes, I was just listening to Gus there. Gus, my hat's off to you. I come from up near where Governor McKiffin was from. And just listening to the show, I understand you were making about $14,000 back in those years. That was a lot more money than what we talk about $14,000 today. But at any rate, big government, what we're seeing right now, I believe, is something called illegitimacy. And the government has got a lot of illegitimate children, so to speak, running around because they have failed in many ways to act appropriately. If you look at the tremendous gun sales that has happened after the election and everything, that should speak to the government and say, you know, we're not doing something right here that's alarming the people that they feel like that they must arm themselves to the teeth. And also illegitimacy, there's negative connotations about the private school issue. That's another problem right there. That the private schools that are popping up everywhere is the illegitimate children of the government.
What do you think, Gus?
I don't know about that word illegitimate because, for example, the Columbine massacre was done by kind of, I think, middle-class kids of parents, good parents. And the shooting in
Newtown, yeah.
Yeah, was done by a young man.
Making $1 million a year, yeah.
You said that back when I was executive secretary, $14,000 was a good salary. I want to tell you, it wasn't a good salary to me. I raised Hades about it the whole time I was there. And John McKiffin would look at me and he'd say he was going to appoint a study commission to look into the matter from every aspect.
All right.
And then he'd throw back his head and laugh, and I'd moan and cuss to myself. But it was a lot. It wasn't a lot of money then.
Mia in College Town. Mia, good morning.
Good morning. I think that a lot of the cuts that have been made in Louisiana this past year, the dismantling of the healthcare system and what has been done to the public school system and higher education at LSU, are counterproductive when it comes to reducing things like the black-on-black violence that your caller referred to. Because if we can, when you take away the opportunities of people to pull themselves up and find value in their lives and in themselves, that other than, you know, drugs, if they see somebody who's selling drugs going by with a lot of money and a nice car, that seems to be their only opportunity.
All right. What about the dismantling of the healthcare system?
Well, let me say this. I hate to say it, it gives me no pleasure, and I have no personal agenda. I will never handle another political campaign. I'm retired. I think Louisiana has the worst governor in my experience. And he's the worst for the most interesting and novel reason. He's a man with an agenda that has absolutely nothing to do with Louisiana. He has decided to run for national office. For example, The one thing you want is an informed populace. Well, he doesn't have press conferences in Louisiana. He has them all over the country when he goes to give a speech to some conservative group. And that's where he expresses his feelings. Not here in Louisiana. Jim, you're in the media. When's the last time the governor had a real press conference here in Louisiana?
Well, it depends on how you define a real press conference. And the way I would define one, I don't know that he's ever had a real press conference.
But, that's almost unbelievable.
But, Gus, he's been elected twice governor now by landslide margins. So some would say he must be doing something right.
Yes, I think that a lot of people feel that he's honest, and people were ready for that. And I think he is an honest man, but he's not a good governor. He, this turning down federal funds where they're the most needed, taking apart the public school system, none of that is good government. He's afraid to do anything that could be used against him later in these conservative groups who he feels mm-hmm. are going to help get him the nomination. Now, I'll make a prediction, and I won't be around to see it, but you will, Jim, and I'd like you to write it down and remember it. I'll bet you when the governor's term of office is over, he does not live in Louisiana. He's going to live in Washington or New York in the seats of power where he can utilize these groups.
Well, he would not be alone. John Breaux lives in Washington or outside of Washington. Russell Long, he lived outside of Washington. Gus, once they get on the national stage, Louisiana is not really their home anymore.
Even closer to home, does Richard Baker live in Louisiana now?
He does live in Louisiana, yes, but he also spends a lot of time in Washington with the National Hedge Fund Association.
I bet Billy Tolzan spends a lot of time in Washington.
And yeah, he's moved out of Louisiana.
Buddy
Romer came back though.
Yeah, he sure did. I bet Benny Johnson spends a lot of time in Washington.
Yeah, he's long gone from Louisiana.
You see, these guys, what happens is, these guys make these tremendous contacts. Now, what's a good contact? A good contact is a contact that you can make big money on. And while they're in the Congress, they make these big contacts, and these people want to hire them later, or their sons, as lobbyists. So there's no reason to come back with the people what sent them, as McKibben would say. They stay up there where the money is. Where the power is, where the glamour is.
297-5633. We'll be back after a 90-second pause to return to the conversation with the wise Gus Weil. Back after this timeout. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. Richard Fisher is producing, and Gus Weil is with us for our final segment of 2012. A listener did note that one Tony Perkins, head of the Family Research Council, works in Washington and returns home almost every weekend, still lives in the Baton Rouge area. So there's one who still loves good old Louisiana, Gus Weil.
I knew him very well. He used to come by my office sometimes. It's interesting. He used to come by my office for advice. He might not say it anymore, but we were politically on opposite ends of the spectrum. But he wanted another viewpoint, to his credit, and I would give it. I'm sure he seldom did what I advised, but I found him to be a fine, nice young gentleman.
Fred downtown. Fred, you're on the air with Gus Weil.
Yeah, hello, Gus, and hello, Jim. I'm new to the area, and I'm a veteran, and have been blessed to live in many parts of the country. And one of the things I've noticed about Baton Rouge area and probably the South in general is the traffic is kind of a problem down here. And, having seen lots of different road systems in other parts of the country, the one thing I don't understand is the parking lots down here seem to have just one entrance and one exit to them. And that's something I've never really understood, and I thought that if they were to fix parking lots so that one business parking lot communicates with the next.
All right. What about...
What was that, Jim?
The gentleman was saying he's obviously noted in his brief stay here that we have real traffic issues in the Baton Rouge area. And
Baton Rouge obviously got too big too fast. I was there a few days ago, and it is a nightmare to get around. I hope they'll do some kind of super highways or something to alleviate it, but it's just about the only bad thing in Baton Rouge. Baton Rouge is a great city with great people.
Daryl on College Drive. Thank you, Fred, and good luck with your stay in Baton Rouge. Daryl, you're on the air with Gus.
Yes, I do, of course, want to agree with him about the job that the governor is doing. It's a real horrible job. But I wanted to ask this question. How is it that you can have smaller government when you have such a large nation? You know, Zachary Police Department can have 18 people on it, but the Baton Rouge Police Department can't survive with 18 people. So how do you have a small government with a very large nation of 300 million people?
Well, it's impossible. Obviously, the same police department that services a smaller municipality couldn't service Baton Rouge, Louisiana with, what do we have now, Jim, 300,000 or 400,000 people?
In the metro area, about 700,000 people.
Well, there you are, so it would be impossible. Yeah, how could you not? How could you? Baton Rouge, I know in New York, a city of 8.5 million people, where the police department is very successful. They have 35,000 uniformed police. They have a separate police force in the school system, totally separate. They have a separate police force underground in the subway system. So they have a separate police force because it is a port. And I want to tell you, all those police, that works. They've got a crime rate much better than Baton Rouge or New Orleans.
Dorothy on Goodwood. Dorothy, thanks for your patience. Good morning.
Oh, good morning. Happy New Year to you both. I wanted to say something. You know, with Bobby Jindal, I think the tail has wagged the dog with him so much, you know. He has used public money to fund private issues, for instance, the school thing. That is just insane.
All right. Do you have a question? Do you have a question?
Yeah. Well, I wanted to ask Gus, you know, do you think, and I think I've asked him this before, do you think that Congress is nothing short of almost treason, the way they have treated this country? I mean, they fell us short. They don't pay attention to the voters anymore. They do what they think they want to do or what Grover Norquist wants to do.
I think that Congress is not treasonous at all. I think that that's a way-out attitude that can lead you to nothing but paranoia. But I think, on the other hand, I've got to agree with you, this acquiescing to a Grover Norquist who is not an elected official is insane. I think that, but those people who we've elected to Congress, I think their collective intellect and integrity still holds.
297.
In other words, we can't give up.
5633. For Gus Weil, 2012 saw the end of life for some prominent folks. George McGovern, 90 years old, Gus. He was a man who was trounced and portrayed as a wimp when he ran for president in 1972. He was a war hero. He was a PhD. He was a family man. And yet most people in America thought that at that point in time, the more noble of the two candidates, the major candidates, was one Richard Milhouse Nixon. How could that have happened?
There's no explaining the combined intellect of the voting public. Look what we've elected so many times in Louisiana. We don't have to go to the United States of America. My goodness. But McGovern was a good man. They painted him successfully, I remember, as a far-left nut. They did it successfully.
Well, and he chose a terrible running mate in Thomas Eagleton, and he probably didn't have a chance anyway, but couldn't even carry his home state of South Dakota, only carried Massachusetts. Curtis in Florida. Good morning, Curtis. You're on the air with Gus.
Good morning, Jim and Gus. I have a question. I'd like to get Gus's thoughts on the difference between an elected official and statesman. And as far as Congress is concerned, which of those two labels would fit what we have going on in Washington?
Well, the difference in an elected official and a statesman is when there's an elected official who is a statesman, it means that we, the people, have been successful in electing a really good person. And what's going on in Washington, I think that, first of all, it reflects we, the people, just like it's reflective in Louisiana. That's who we put in there. But, no, I think there's a lot of people who are still statesmen. I'll tell you what's happened this term of the Congress. A lot of statesmen have decided not to seek reelection. That's something.
297-5633, Mac on government. Mac, you're on the air with Gus Weil. Hi, Mac.
Hi, how are you?
Fine.
Good. Look, the guy that called and talked about he shoots his AR-15 assault weapon at targets. Well, I'm a Vietnam veteran, and I started out shooting at targets, too. And then the next person, next thing I had to shoot at was people. I'm in agreement and total agreement with Gus. We don't need these weapons, because that same guy who told Mary Landrieu that he shot thousands of rounds at targets wouldn't hesitate to shoot one of those blacks that he was talking about the black-on-black crime. Y'all have a nice day, and God bless you.
All right, Mac.
Thank you. You know, God knows how many outright certifiable psychiatric cases right now are sitting at home examining their weapons collection or buying quietly more ammunition. It's a frightening thing. We don't know, A, if they'll use them on us, and B, who is us? In Newtown, it was the most indefensible, innocent populace, the little children.
Randy and Zachary. Randy, you're on the air with Gus Weil.
Yes, I just want to make a comment on the point of a statesman. The quote, if I quote correctly, Harry Truman said, a statesman is a dead politician. Thanks.
I believe a statesman is a statesman, and a politician is a politician. They're two different breeds of animal. A politician is someone who we elect or don't elect. A statesman is someone who, once we put them in office, or they get appointed to office, they choose what is best for the people over their own selfish wishes.
Well, Dan Bornay, who's been with us a few times and worked for Russell Long, said that when senators get elected to a 6-year term, Russell Long said the first 2 years of the term you can be a statesman, the middle 2 years you're a politician, in the final 2 years, you're a prostitute.
That's a heck of a statement. Russell Long was a brilliant man.
And a brilliant politician.
And a brilliant politician. But I want to tell you, everybody doesn't have that name. Long is his late father virtually created a modern Louisiana. I knew Russell Long very well. Soon after John McKiffin was elected, I was in Washington with him at his home at the Watergate Hotel, and he offered me a job to come work for him. And I wouldn't have left McKiffin. That was the reason I didn't go. But he was a really brilliant man.
Mm-hmm. Some great men of letters died in 2012, including Gore Vidal, who ran for office a few times, 86 years old. What did you think of him?
Who?
Gore Vidal.
Oh, Gore Vidal was a character out of a book. He had an acerbic wit, razor sharp. who wanted to take apart everything. And he his greatest thrill was in shocking people. Witness is a novel. What was it called, that novel about the...
Myra Breckinridge?
Yeah, Myra Breckinridge. So he was the first American playwright, way before Tennessee Williams, to attack, or rather to deal with the problem of homosexuality. He did it in a couple of novels. But he was a brilliant man. And he aspired. He came from a very prominent family, I think. The Gore family, I think the same family as Jackie Kennedy. But he was an oddball in many ways. There's no doubt about it. But gosh, what a brilliant man. And a brilliant, more than novelist, he was a brilliant, what word am I looking for, Jim? He wrote, I'll think of it next week.
What, he wrote Burr?
He wrote not columns, but opinions, whatever. I can't remember the word.
Commentaries?
Commentaries, yeah.
There you go.
Okay. He was a columnist. Brilliant.
Ray Bradbury died.
Ray Bradbury was a genius. Ray Bradbury had the most inventive mind. His science fiction and the Martian Chronicles and the Illustrated Man and Fahrenheit 247.
451.
He was a brilliant, brilliant writer.
Yeah, he was 92. He composed Fahrenheit 451 in the basement of the UCLA library.
Well, I didn't know that.
Yeah,
that was
on an Underwood typewriter. Who does that anymore?
Well, I'm the last. You know your people, Jim.
Don't you? You've written all your works on typewriters,
yeah.
Right?
I never kept up. For example, I'm embarrassed to say I don't have a cell phone. People look at me like I've taken leave of my senses. I'm computer illiterate. So you might say, and now I walk with a cane, you might say I'm almost totally crippled.
I wouldn't say that. The mind is still sharp, and that's
Thank
the most
you,
important most important part of the human anatomy. Robert Bork, he died.
Bork was something. Huh? He was so way out there. He was an early Tea Party man. He was so far out there that the Congress just refused to confirm him to the Supreme Court. And he was a brilliant man, but he was so far out. He'd have been as bad as the only black member of the Supreme Court who was
Clarence
an
Thomas.
Embarrassment.
And Clarence Thomas. Norman Schwarzkopf died last week, 78 years old. Victim of Alzheimer's, but
yeah.
In his prime, which wasn't so long ago, he was quite a force.
Well, we celebrate him because now it's getting to be something if they don't have at least one big scandal in their lives. And he was a good man, obviously. And yes, died with Alzheimer's, which is to me the saddest of all diseases.
Mm-hmm. And at age 47, Rodney King passed away.
Rodney King was a tragic man. He was, of course, beaten up by those policemen in Los Angeles, which caused the California riots that just about took that city apart. And incidentally, that city was put back together by a Louisianian, the late Lod Cook, who the governor of California appointed to head the rebuilding and fixing that city of Los Angeles. Rodney King was not an unkind man. He was also an alcoholic, a terrible one.
Neil Armstrong, first man on the moon, 82 years old. He passed away.
Neil Armstrong was a quiet, soft-spoken American hero. Now, he qualifies for an American hero, and he didn't shoot off his mouth about anything. He was quiet. And when his day had passed, he got even more quiet. But he was an American hero.
Well, tomorrow we'll talk about some of the entertainment figures who passed away this year with John Wirt of The Advocate. But among
John those, Wirt is a fine writer.
He sure is. Helen Gurley Brown, 90 years old. She was a trailblazer.
What a character. Is her husband finally passed away?
David Brown, yes, he died.
How old was he?
He was older than she.
Oh, my goodness. So. she was Cosmopolitan Magazine, which she turned into a kind of a high-class sex, exploited that for sex, and did real well. In fact, gained fame and fortune.
Well, Gus, we got to roll, but Happy New Year to you.
I wish you and all your listeners the happiest and peaceful of New Year's, and God bless everyone.
And we'll be back tomorrow. Thanks for listening, everybody. For Richard Fisher, I'm Jim Engster. Stay tuned.
Podcasts of The Jim Engster Show are available at WRKF.org. The Jim Engster Show is produced in association with the Louisiana Radio Network and is copyrighted by WRKF for the private use of its audience. Any other use of any portion of this program without the written consent of WRKF is prohibited. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of WRKF, its officers, and members.